There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free. And things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Well, good evening, everybody, and thank you very much for joining us. Got a great show lined up for you. Very excited about our guest that we're going to have on for this evening. This is the third and final installment of the Haunting Evidence interviews, Tim.
It is.
It is. We were able to wrap up Patrick Burns, I think, just before Haunting Evidence launched. Mm-hmm. We did our interview with Patrick, and of course, he's become a good friend of ours and has been with us on a couple of occasions. And then, of course, we talked to the lovely Carla Barron last year and mm-hmm. discussed it. And the elusive third-party member, we finally trapped him. We had to bribe him. I was told by Patrick that John will work for Twinkies, so I'm sending him a case of Twinkies.
I do, too.
And a Darkness Radio t-shirt just to get him on the air. So
yeah.
I do want to make a couple of quick announcements. And first off, I want to mention we also have another guest that will be jumping in for a few minutes to talk to us about UNIFCON, and I want to make that mention. But I also want to mention to you, we have a press release here from Fleeting Souls Foundation. They have a new website launch, and this is a new story that came out today on Sunday, August 12th. The Fleeting Souls Foundation, a nonprofit organization, will be officially launching their new website. The Fleeting Souls Foundation is an index and support system of psychics, spiritualists, healers, peoples of the cloth, scientists, researchers, and paranormal investigators, as well as people of the media and arts, offering a well-rounded support network and referral service for all needs. Let me see, Tim, if I got this right. It's good for psychics, spiritualists, yep. healers, people of the cloth, scientists, researchers, and paranormal investigators. Isn't that like all the members of the Village People?
I think so, yeah. Yes, yeah. You forgot about the construction worker and the Indian. But
yes,
other than that,
okay.
Yeah,
all right, good.
Yeah, you got it.
Well, the foundation was formed out of beliefs that both the spiritual and the paranormal worlds could work together to provide the public with knowledge and resources that would benefit both the spiritual community and the paranormal community, as well as the public in general, offering precise, up-to-date research, techniques, ethics, and teachings in the spiritual and paranormal communities. So they would like you to please check out their website and check out all that they're doing at fleetingsouls.com. That's FLEETINGSOULS.com. That's fleetingsouls.com. And you can get all your information there. Join up. It's an amazing deal run by Angelic Ross, who is the founder of Fleeting Souls Foundation. So please check that out when you get the chance. Now, as we've been talking, we made a big mention of it again last weekend. This October, there is one of the biggest and best paranormal conferences out in the marketplace, UNIFCON, which is taking place at Penn State in State College, Pennsylvania. And it is one of my favorite conferences to be a part of. I went out there 2 years ago as a fan, and I get to go back this year, and I get to host a debate with two paranormal geniuses. So
that's no way to talk about me. I'm not going to be. No, I'm kidding.
So, but we are going to talk to Serge here, who is the manager of the events and setting things up. And Serge, you've got some exciting news about new changes and additions to the lineup and what's going to be going on. Is that right?
I sure do. Hey, Dave. Hey, Tim. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks a lot for coming on and sharing with us this evening. So what's going on? What are looks like you've had a couple of cool new additions. Who's going to be coming out?
Oh, man, where to begin? Well, let's see. I was on my way over to New York by train ride, and I got a phone call from the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And they actually are allowing us to go ahead and work with them and try to collect money and, you know, kind of do a little good, a little benefit for the conference just we have so many people coming to the conference that, you know, we feel that we can actually, if everybody participates and does just a little bit, you know, we can actually achieve a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's very exciting. On top of that, A&E is sponsoring our conference, and the things that they are going to do is just mind-blowing. First of all, they're saying they're going to film and cover the conference, so there's going to be media all over the place.
Awesome.
And that's exciting for everyone, I think.
That means I have to dust out my Elvis jumpsuit so I really shine for the camera.
Dave, I hope you get a good haircut because they're really good. Want you on there.
Excellent.
Let's see. We also have we're going to have an exclusive sneak peek of the Paranormal State episode. I'm not going to tell you which one, but you know, we're going to do a little showing of the episode and then do a little Q&A with the people on the show and maybe some of the producers as well. On top of that, there's, I mean, I don't want to really go into it a whole lot just because I want people to be surprised when they get there. But goodie bags, giveaways, you know, a whole kit and caboodle. It's going to be great.
Great. Now let's go through the lineup. You've got an impressive lineup of speakers coming in this year. Let's go over who you've got coming in and what we can expect.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, Thursday we're starting off with Doug Bradley, and this is kind of our first time starting off with an entertainer, if you will. You know, he's been in Hellraiser as Pinhead, and we kind of think that a lot of the students and a lot of the great, you know, he's an old school horror fan. Everybody knows who Pinhead is. You know, I fear him the most out of all the villains out there. So he's going to be a great, great addition to the conference. He's going to be doing Shakespearean renditions of Death. On top of that, then we go on to Friday, and we start off with vendors and workshops, and it's really weird that we're doing our opening ceremony at 5:30 on Friday when the conference technically already began, but it's kind of giving a time for everybody to show up and, you know, everybody gathers around, and that's when officially the conference is really going to start.
Sure.
And that evening, we actually have Lorraine Warren doing a lecture, and we just announced her partner speaker, who is Father LaBarre. And he is really, really big. He's a priest, a big priest who is in the Archdiocese of New York, and he's worked on several, I guess the best way to describe it, cases that have gone spiritually wrong, you know.
Right.
And it's really going to be an important case, I think, for people who are interested in the demonology aspect of the paranormal, who really want to learn more about what to do, the do's and don'ts kind of thing. You know, this isn't your go in there with a ghost hunter's ghost pack and fry the demons out of there. You know, this is really a serious case, especially if you delve into something so evil and so demonic on your investigations.
Right.
And once again, at nighttime, we do offer, you know, tours of the campus, and then there's going to be a ghost hunt by several of the speakers who kind of, you know, once again, educate the investigators and give them any new tips that they kind of get along in their investigations, share their, you know, ideas, things like that. Saturday, once again, we do vendors and workshops, and then you will be doing the darkness debate, which I think we're all excited to hear. I don't know if you want to, we've been playing around with the idea of having you kind of talk about the Ouija board, the do's and the pros and cons of the Ouija board, maybe even talking about what's the most effective way of talking to spirit communication? You know, how do you know that talking with spirits is actually safe? You know, who do you know? How do you know who you're talking to is actually who they are?
Sure. Yep, that's what we're looking forward to, and I think we're going to have two of the experts will be debating that. I'll be moderating the darkness debate, so that should be a good time.
I really hope it doesn't turn into a fist fight, but I believe you'll do a good job.
I kind of hope it does, so people are chanting, Davey, Davey. It'll be like an episode of Paranormal Springer.
Well, I've been actually talking with a school, and they are able to set up like a ringside event, so when we have boxing gloves, just in case anything goes wrong.
All right, so we've got that going, and then what's going on for Sunday? You've also got a couple of big speakers I think people might be familiar with coming in on Sunday too, don't you?
Yes. Before we go into Sunday, just want to do a quick shout-out.
Sure.
John Keel will be finishing off on Saturday.
Oh, that's right, John Keel. Okay, sorry about that.
Yeah, Mothman Prophecies. We're really excited to have him go on, and a lot of the people are really excited to see, because he's actually coming out of retirement, and, you know, he's going to do one more final thing for our conference, and we're really excited to have him on board with us. And then moving on to Sunday, Ghost Hunters. And right before their speech, you know, right before they lecture, we're having a dinner once again, but this time we're doing it on Sunday. And this year we're actually going to do Ghost Hunters the Musical, which I am really, really excited to see how it's going to turn out.
Ghost Hunters the Musical.
Yes.
Okay.
and if this goes well, I'm going to actually promote this to Broadway in New York, and we'll see, you know, where that goes.
Excellent.
There's going to be a hit song, Dude Run.
Dude Run, yes.
Yeah.
Wasn't that covered by Sean Cassidy in the 70s, Tim?
The Dude
Run. Oh, no, no, that's
Dude
just...
Dude Run, 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 the Dude Run, Run.
Okay, perfect.
So that's going to be great. And I'm not making any promises. I'm still trying to get Jason Grant to come on with a banjo or something or do a little tap dancing. They're playing a little hardball. But hopefully we'll get them on there.
Excellent.
And, you know, of course, they're going to finish off the conference this year, and they'll be kind of taking us home. And we're really kind of pressing them to do something different this year, and they've agreed. You know, it's really going to be something all Ghost Hunters fans, I think, should go. If they have seen Jason Grant do something at other events, I think they should still come. You know, this is going to be something really, really different.
Oh, no doubt.
They're going to have a lot of fun.
I hear they're doing it in drag. Am I right?
Well... Who told you this?
Oh, I'm sorry. I blew the whistle too early, didn't I?
This was one of the surprises that I was
trying to
keep.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, gosh. All right, great. Now, tickets are still available for this event, correct? And
that's
not
right.
Only tickets for the regular event, but tickets to have dinner with the celebrities are still available, correct?
That's right.
Okay, so how can people find all this information?
They can log on to www.univcon.org. That's UNIVCON.org. And, you know, the site is great for updates. We're constantly updating the information about, you know, musicals. So we're working on this thing called the IC committees. You know, there's just every time we're actually going to go on in another radio show or give updates to radio personnel, you know, we're going to kind of put it on the web so people can know when they can and when they can, you know, go on the radio show and listen to
great
for anything new.
Well, keep us in the loop, and as you're getting new information coming in, we'd love to hear about it, and we'll keep the audience updated on that as well.
Of course, always. It's always a pleasure to have you rebound the information.
Hey, Serge, we appreciate it, and you guys do. You have a premier program. It's great. I highly recommend if anybody's looking for a major conference to go to, it's going to be a great opportunity, and you've got some of our good friends. Patrick Burns is going to be there from Haunting Evidence. You've got Chris Fleming from Dead Famous is going to be there, Lorraine Warren, Father LaBar. You've got Jason and Grant from Ghost Hunters. You've got Professor Paranormal Lloyd Auerbach is going to be hosting a workshop. You've got Michelle Bellinger doing a workshop on vampires, I believe. Keith and Carl Johnson are going to be there doing a demonology talk. So you've got a lot of stuff lined up for this event.
That's right. I'm actually making a to-do note right now to send John Oliver a box of Twinkies as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll bribe John with Twinkies and T-shirts if that's what it takes. Well, Serge, you have a good one. Thanks a lot for joining us here tonight. And for all of you out there, if you're interested in attending, I would highly recommend it. It is one of the premier, as I mentioned, conferences out in the marketplace. Go on, check out univcon.com. And, or is that univcon.org, Tim? Now I'm blanking. You'll have to look that up for me again.
Spring of Serge. Which one is it, Serge?
It's .org.
.org, it is. Okay, good deal. So univcon.org, univ.org. Or you can go right to my website at Darkness Radio, and we have big banners up for it. If you click it, it'll take you right there. We're going to start off now with our next guest. We want to get into the show because I know this is what everybody's tuning in to hear. And I'm, as I said, very pleased and excited to have him joining us on the show this evening. John Oliver is America's premier psychic intuitive. He's living in New York City. He has extensive background in psychic police work, ghost investigations. He does personal readings and is starring on court TV series Haunting Evidence, known for his amazing accuracy and uncanny insight. I don't know if anybody out there has still not seen an episode of the show. You are missing it. It's been amazing this new season. And we're going to delve into that with John and talk to him a little bit more. About what he does and how he works. We'll be finding out about that in the first hour, and then come back to the second hour of the show. We're going to be talking more about some of the cases that he's worked on professionally and on the show. He has worked professionally as an in-demand psychic since his teenage years, having presented thousands of seminars throughout the United States and Europe on how to develop your ESP. He's also given over 13,000 powerful readings to individuals from all walks of life. Now, for 7 years, John has taught courses in psychic development for the university union at the University of Virginia and at J. Sargent Reynolds College Continuing Education Department in Richmond, Virginia. And then in 1997, John presented a special program called The Enlightened Individual, The Key to an Enlightened World at the United Nations. So this guy's got some pull behind him, Tim. This is a little bit of a different guest. We don't have just your boiler basement gypsy on the street corner medium we're talking to tonight. We got a big shot. John, welcome to the show, and thank you very much for joining us tonight, sir.
Hello, Dave. Nice to be here with you.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, we got a chance to meet last year at UNIFCON and had such a great time. You were an excellent speaker. It was great having you on the panel discussion we had up there. And just you bring a totally different look and insight to a lot of the questions that I've heard answered 1,000 times. That's why I wanted to try to get you on the show here this year and talk to you a little bit about it. And also, I'm really excited to announce you decided to join us at the Stanley Retreat that'll be taking place in November, and you're going to come in for an afternoon on Saturday and do a talk with us on using psychics in criminal investigation. So thank you very much for being a part of that with us as well.
Sure, and I'm looking forward to that. I actually, as a psychic, don't have a lot of experience with paranormal conferences, which is kind of ironic. The conference last year at Penn State was really my first ever of that type of conference. I've been part of many conferences that have to do with, you know, metaphysics or psychic development, and a lot of health expos. And by the way, I won't take the Twinkies, but I could maybe take a shot of wheatgrass juice or something like that.
Okay, we'll get you there.
Because I'm really, really a big health food person. But I found that a wonderful forum for people that wouldn't otherwise have a way to connect with each other, mm-hmm. you know, to talk about paranormal events. And it's really amazing how many of us there are out there. And the conference at Penn State, I was very impressed with. I was impressed with the young people that put it together there. And I remember attending, I myself attended a Ryan Buell seminar. And I found him to be just incredibly intelligent, articulate, and absolutely knew what he was talking about, especially for someone, I think, he's about 23 years old, something like that.
Right, yeah, he's a fantastic speaker and has a lot of insight, I think, is very worthy for people to hear. You don't have to be on TV for you to be able to really speak well and have a good presence. Of course, he's going to be on TV this season, starting up, I guess, shooting 6 more episodes of Paranormal State, so that'll be something to watch for as well. But yeah, that was a great chance. If I would have never known that you, you know, hadn't been at these conference type situations before. But then again, you've taught so many courses and have worked with so many different people. You kind of flow pretty easily at this point, I would guess.
Yes, exactly. Now, like I said, I've been to a lot of conferences, but never went under that umbrella, you know, of
sure.
the paranormal. So it was just interesting to be with that particular group of people, and I found it especially interesting that there were many people that were attending the paranormal conference that were slightly different in their background and in their interests as the types of people who attend, let's say, the metaphysical or the psychic conferences.
Right.
There was some intersection, but it was just interesting how I didn't see, you know, if I had to guess, maybe a 20% intersection in the knowledge and the interest and the background. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be interesting if somehow we could bring those two, you know, together to marry each other a little bit more, because there are a lot of tools, I think, from both ends that the other, you know, the other could use.
Right, and that's something we've been interested in talking more about, and that's one of the reasons I was so excited about bringing you on the show, is using the gifts. You know, I mean, a lot of people discount psychic ability and mediumship as a tool in a paranormal investigation, because if I can't sense it and feel it, what good is it to me to have you there telling me what to do or what you're sensing? You know, and then we have a lot of psychics and mediums we've talked to who refuse to use any technological stuff because they feel that kind of messes with their tuning in with what's going on. So, yeah, marrying the two topics, marrying the different fields of the paranormal is something that we've been striving to do, especially with our events.
Mm-hmm, exactly. You know, it's like on the show with Patrick. When I first met Patrick and saw all of his equipment, I remember in my mind thinking, my God, what am I going to do with all of this? Okay. But then I found that it was very interesting. For example, in the episode that we did in North Dakota, when I was sensing all of these spirit presences around me, I mean, a lot, mm-hmm. a lot. There were a lot of, that was the episode of that had the Native American theme to it.
Right.
The Native American boy had been, you know, murdered and left there. And I felt a tremendous amount of spirit activity walking around, flying, going up, down, everywhere. And I right away said, Patrick, quick, take a picture here, quick. Something just flew through my body. Take a picture here. And it was fascinating to see the photographs of those moments when the mists were there and the extra images were there in the photographs that came and went as I was sensing they were coming and going. So that, I think that is a very a good way, actually, if you have a good medium around, a good way to save
to say film, maybe.
Right, exactly. Hey, I want to ask you real quickly. Let's tell the listeners a little bit about, again, if you're not familiar with the show Haunting Evidence, it's on Wednesday nights on Court TV. And what they've done is they've taken a paranormal investigator, that is Patrick Burns, and then they've got I believe they refer to her as a psychic profiler, that's Carla Baron, and then medium John Oliver. They take the three of you out to sites of cold cases, cases in criminals, criminal investigations that have led nowhere, and they've kind of run out of steam. So what they're hoping to do is, using Patrick's technology and being able to tap into you and Carla, maybe revive the case, see if they can pick up any kind of evidence that might give them a lead and a direction where to go. So they lead you to situations, but beforehand they don't give you any of the information of where you're going. They just bring you there. Patrick feeds you little bits to get you guys to flow and kind of fill them in. Is that a correct assumption?
Yes. Now, we do know which airport we're flying into, but frequently what happens is we fly into an airport and then we're picked up by a production assistant and we'll drive an hour, 2 hours, sometimes a little bit longer than that to get sure. to our location. And then, we check in late at night to a hotel. The next morning we wake up, go to makeup, and we all meet. I mean, that's really, during that whole time, the first time that I see Carla or Patrick. We all get into the car, and we drive, and the producer says, everyone be quiet, because they're just taping the scenery, and then all right. of a sudden, Patrick will say, Carla and John, or team, we are here in wherever we are, and we're looking into the murder of whoever it is, and let me have your first impression. And then soon after that, Carla and I separate, and she goes off and does her thing, I do my thing. Now, what's interesting, which a lot of people do not know, is I have no idea, nor does she have any idea, anything that each other has said until, the episode airs.
Right.
I especially do not like to discuss the case with anybody before I'm there to sense, what I'm feeling, what I'm getting, because I am a big believer in something called front-loading. Okay.
Oh, no doubt. And right. Yeah, you don't want to know anything more about it to taint your possible thoughts or views or the images that you're getting, correct?
Exactly, because I really believe that, the subconscious is very powerful, and anyone who doesn't believe that just has to think about what happens to them when they go to sleep at night and have a dream. You have these random images, random stories, things that are like what happened to you that day, some things that aren't like what happened to you that day, flying dreams, crazy dreams. Subconscious is powerful, and if you give it any input whatsoever, it just will run away with itself, and it's very difficult to tell until you verify the facts, the psychic clues that are given with what actually transpires in the case later, whether or not you're accurate or not, because the psychic eye, the third eye, the mind's eye, whatever you want to call it,
right.
In my experience, views equally the imagination as it does psychic impressions, and doesn't really distinguish between the two. So that's why front loading is a big, big no-no.
Sure.
So when I see Carla give her reading on the TV, that's the first time I'm seeing it.
Very cool. Well, we're going to get more into Haunting Evidence. We're going to take our first break of the hour right now. When we come back, we're going to talk to John a little bit about when he got his start. When did he find out that he was a psychic? Was it something he knew his whole life? And what exactly can he do and what can't he do? We'll find out more right after this.
Are UFOs real? Does Bigfoot exist? Was Emily Rose really possessed? Who is the next American Idol?
She bangs! She bangs!
Thank you.
We try to answer these questions and more each week on The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
For 58 years, Fate has consistently supplied its loyal readership with a broad array of true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, archaeological hotspots, alternative science, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Are you tired of reading about what couple in Hollywood is breaking up or divorcing? Have you ever wondered where you can find the news that covers the subjects that you are really interested in? I would like to invite you to visit SupernaturalNews.com. Supernatural News uses the latest internet technology to search for the topics we know you will be interested in reading. News of the latest Bigfoot, UFO, or Loch Ness monster sightings. Read about the latest conspiracy theories and urban legends. Supernatural News, where belief and reality merge.
Do you hear loud moans and banging on your walls? Next time, pay for the better hotel room.
Oh, no more Yankee, my Winky. The donga need food.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town with your hosts, Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Well, thanks to everybody for tuning in to tonight's show. Our guest, as I mentioned, is John J. Oliver, and he is a medium. He is one of the stars of the TV show on Court TV, Haunting Evidence. And Mr. Oliver, let's start off in the beginning here. Now, I know that you said you've been involved since you were in your teens. When did you realize that you had abilities like this?
Well, you know the little boy in The Sixth Sense.
Right.
The little boy in The Sixth Sense had a lot of things happen to him in the movie that happened to me in my childhood. I remember actually seeing physical manifestations of spirit when I was a child. I mean a spirit that looks like you or I, not the mist that I see now or the orbs or, you know, things like that, but actual spirits that you could interact with, talk to, you know, in that way, just like in The Sixth Sense. I know that I could always do it as long as I remember, but the time I specifically remember being a first time, though it happened before that, was when I was attending an uncle's funeral when I was 5 years old, a great uncle, an elderly man. And he was in the coffin, but he was also at the funeral wearing the same thing that he was wearing in the coffin.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time that I realized that maybe people attended their own funerals, which is actually very common for a spirit to attend their own funeral. So that continued throughout my childhood. As I got older, let's say, more as a, you know, older elementary school student, it sort of tapered away. Seeing the spirits, the manifestations, tapered away. And looking back on it, the way I describe it is that when I was very small, my ability seemed to be focused more on the outside, phenomenally, in the three-dimensional world.
Okay.
But I've gotten older now, the ability's gone inside. I see it internally now. On some occasions, I still will see a spirit, you know, that's manifest, but it's a rare occurrence. I'd say it maybe only happens a couple of times a year. In New York City, it's very likely to happen if I'm walking late at night, you know, and looking on streets that are more quiet, where there might be churches with, you know, steps where homeless people sleep. There are homeless, dead homeless, walking around the streets of New York City who don't realize that they've crossed over, and that's, you know, kind of sad. Because if you are used to living on the street, having no family connections, no friends, and you die, and you maybe die in your sleep on a cold winter night, you wake up the next day and carry on business as usual because people are ignoring you all the time anyway.
Well, that, you know, now that's something interesting, John, because I've often wondered about that. Some people would say that ghosts don't know that they're dead. But don't they know when they walk in to order a cup of coffee or nobody throws a quarter in their cup or all of a sudden they're not hungry anymore, they don't need to go to the bathroom anymore? Don't they realize that there's something going on? Maybe they're not who they were before?
Yes. Some of them do, and some of them just make an adjustment to that, because some of the homeless, for example, if you look at them now, some of them are mentally ill and aren't really aware of what's going on the way you and I are, and they're used to people, you know, just ignoring them. And ghosts can be hungry, by the way. Ghosts can, you know, feel like they have to go to the bathroom, and maybe in some dimension, you know, they do, because everything on the astral plane, which is the plane of emotion, okay, can happen just like it does on the earth plane, and whoever is stuck on the astral plane, not knowing they're dead, can go on living just as if, you know, they were still alive in third dimension. You know, the movie The Others, Nicole Kidman's movie?
Right, right.
That movie is exactly the way things are. The people in that house continued having cups of tea, you know, continued coming down to breakfast, you know, reading books at night,
How are they manifesting food?
Well, you see, they're manifesting food on the astral plane. It's not food in third dimension, but it's food in their dimension. Because, you see, the astral plane is really a plane of dreams. It's not one of the objective realities like we live in. We're in the third dimension. And it's not like some of the realities beyond the astral plane when someone has actually, you know, crossed over. And here's a very good test for anybody. If you are out of your body at night and want to know whether or not you are in the dreamland or the astral plane, you know, between here and there, or whether you've actually in another dimension where you're interacting with angels or spirit guides, it's a very simple test. When you ask the being in front of you in your dream or in your out-of-the-body experience to turn into a pile of flowers, and then it does, then you're in the dreamland, okay? If I stand across from you, Dave, and ask you to turn into a pile of flowers, you're not going to, because we're in third dimension. So the same thing is true. Once you get past the veil of the astral plane, and I ask a being to turn into a pile of flowers, and it doesn't, I'm now in another reality that is as objective as this one is, rather than subjective and pliable to the whims and urges of the subconscious or conscious mind. And that's how they manifest food. Just like you've had a dream before, I'm sure, that you've been eating or drinking, have you not?
Right.
Somewhere along the line. Okay. Same way you manifest food in your dreams, that's the way the spirits manifest food on the astral plane, because you're dealing with a dimension of the same substance.
John, don't toy with me, because if I know in the next world that I can have as many McRib sandwiches as I want, I'm ready to leave now.
Oh, you can have as many sandwiches as you want. Now, you know, this is very interesting that we mentioned McRib sandwiches and Twinkies and so forth, and I said I'm a health food person. Just as a side note, which I didn't hear at all at the conference last year when I was kind of listening to see if anyone would address this, but, you know, it's a very common belief, actually, that the animals that we eat while we are here on the earth plane are waiting for us on the other side when we get there, that we somehow will have to redeem our karma to them for eating them. So when I first got a hint of that, I became a vegetarian very fast.
Well, I don't think I have to worry. There's no proof that McRib sandwiches are actually any kind of animal. So
that's true. McRib sandwiches are not any kind of animal. They're like probably have a mixture of about 100 of them.
That's right. See, I'm safe. Hot dogs and McRib sandwiches, I don't have any karmic justice to deal with when I cross over, John.
Well, Dave, you know, the astral plane is very tricky. You might have some giant hot dogs. I could see you rise up to the light and there's a hot dog waiting for
us. Now it's our turn. Oh, gosh. now, so for clarification, I've had a couple people in the chat room ask. So you do see ghosts like figures, but you also see mists and orbs and ethereal-type ghosts as well?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see solid-form ghosts? Do you see a ghost that looks as plain as me walking in through a room, but then it'll go through a wall?
When I was a child, I saw that all the time. All the time. Not it wasn't constant, but I would say, you know, several times a week. Absolutely. When I was a child, and the reason for that, I believe now, is the children have a different type of brain function going on than adults. It's an actual biological, physiological thing. I've heard a lot of artists say, "Oh, when you're a child, you're open and you're free, and then you get talked out of it." Well, I think that's partially true, but I also know that there is a biological, physiological thing going on with the brain that changes as you get older. For example, when you are an infant out of your mother's womb, you know, the first few days, an infant does not have the ability to distinguish where his hand reach ends and the wall across the room starts. An infant sees it all as one holistic manifestation. He is the wall. He is the mother's arms. He's everything. All right. Now, it's interesting also to note that infants are emitting delta wave frequencies. If you hook them up to a brainwave monitor, they're emitting delta wave frequencies, which is a very slow frequency of wave that has a very high amplitude of wave. Now, as that child gets older, 5 years old, 6 years old, the child's brainwaves speed up, but they're still much slower than ours are right now. A child in that age range is at alpha wave, which is still, you know, pretty high amplitude of wave, but a slower frequency. And that wave frequency, you and I experience every day at least twice. And that's when we're first groggy, waking up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the state that you're in, that if you were to hear a song on the radio while you're in that state, you're likely to have that song play in the back of your head the rest of the day. Has that ever happened to you before?
Oh, every day.
Oh, yeah, you see that?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Because it literally gets recorded in your mind track while you're emitting alpha waves. And then it happens again at night when you are getting groggy and getting ready to go to sleep.
Right. As a matter of fact, they say those are the two best times to learn. That's why audiobooks and meditation CDs are so good at that time, because that's when your mind is most focused and willing to accept information and absorb it and actually retain it.
Absolutely. And now what's interesting about that is you take a child that's 5 years old that's walking around playing, they're emitting alpha waves all the time.
Oh.
So literally children are recording devices. So, you know, if you scold a 12-year-old, they'll look at you like you're crazy and walk away, you know. If you scold a 5-year-old, look at him funny, they'll bust out crying like it's the end of the world.
Right.
Okay. It's like that, because it just goes to a much deeper level. So also, around these ages, the brain actually changes. In fact, we know that there are changes in the brain as far as learning languages are concerned as a person gets older. Okay. You know, a child is biologically programmed for language at age 2-3 years old, and if they're not exposed to language, science knows now, they'll make one up. In fact, you see that with triplets, quadruplets. If you leave them to themselves, they'll make up a language that's grammatically sophisticated, has vocabulary, that they make up. It's just something that's biological in the brain. I believe that the psychic sense is that way, and the ability to look into the other side while you are in an alpha brainwave state also biologically changes as we get older. That's why even though I was open, and fortunately, as I got older, you know, I had a mother and parents that just sort of accepted what I was able to see,
mm-hmm.
and never tried to talk me out of it, that it wasn't, you know, that it wasn't there. I mean, I did have my mother once be concerned enough that she brought a nun over to hold a prayer service at our house. And I told her it's not going to do any good, that she has no power over these spirits, because
right.
I said they're in the church too. I tried to tell her that if they're in the church too, then and they're praying in the church all the time, then how is she going to get them out of our house? Well, let's just try it. And I remember feeling silly about being about 8 years old, standing in the living room with my parents and my family, with the good sister nun came over, and we're all holding hands, singing some songs and doing some prayers to bless the house. And, of course, it was all fine that night, but, you know, the next day, there they come again, you know, the spirit. So as you grow up, it does change. So now I get a sense that they're there. I'll feel something pass through my body kinesthetically.
Okay.
You know, tactilely. Once in a while, when the conditions are right, and people ask me all the time, well, what are the right conditions? I don't know 100% what the right conditions are, except that I know there must be some right conditions, because it just happens infrequently. It usually will happen at night. Like I, again, use the example of walking down the street late at night in New York City,
mm-hmm.
where it's, you know, more quiet, let's say on the Upper East Side, let's say on Madison Avenue, and I just want to take a walk. That it's likely, you know, at that time of night, this time of night. Maybe the atmosphere is charged in a particular way because there's just been a lightning storm. Maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe I'm feeling particularly mellow, and therefore my brain waves are in a you know, very low alpha wave frequency, so all the conditions are just right, you know. But when you're a child, all those conditions are more right, you know, more frequently.
Well, haven't they done tests, John? I know that there were a few women, especially that claimed that they were communicating with the Virgin Mary, and they hooked up their brain waves, and these women were in a full state of awake, but when they began conversing with what they believed to be Mary, their mind would enter this alpha state, which they said was impossible to do in an awake mode. Do you
yes.
believe that your brain is doing that? It's when you're starting to make these connections, you're amping up into this higher vibrational level, and your brain is kicking over into that alpha state to help open up that doorway for you?
Yes, and I know that when I work on a case, I get a certain feeling in my body when I feel like I'm there. You know, when I feel like I'm in that alpha state and able to perceive internally, and you know, in that way. So yes, I think that's absolutely true. And you can see that these people that are, you know, having communication with deities or spirits or Mother Mary or whatever they're communicating with. I, by the way, just for the record, I think there's a lot of people communicating with Mother Mary who believe they're communicating with Mother Mary, who are communicating with something that may or may not be Mother Mary, because there are also a lot of imposters out there on the astral plane. Like, imagine, Dave, if you were on the other side and you wanted to get a lot of attention, are you going to come as yourself, Dave, or are you going to say, guess what, I'm Mother Mary?
Right.
Talking to you, people listen to Mother Mary, and then it may not be Mother Mary.
Well, let me ask you this, too. This was a good question brought up to us on the boards by Tuesday. We just kind of mentioned the fact that you feel that you're raising your vibration to speak to the spirits. Do you believe that spirits themselves then are lowering their vibrational levels so that they can communicate? Do you believe that there's a meeting ground? Or are you just, for better lack, getting off on that highway, boom, and then you're on that, you know, you're into their level? Or do you believe that they're kind of coming down to you and you're coming up to them and you guys find a point where you're able to meet and communicate?
You know, this is a very interesting question, and I have heard this, and I have heard this theory before. I'll tell you what I think about it, but ultimately I don't know for sure, but here's what I think about it. I think that a ghost that's walking down the street that is unconscious of the fact that he is dead, probably, who doesn't even have the ability to know that I'm there, probably doesn't have the ability to lower its vibration or raise its vibration or do anything else to take an active role in that communication. I do think that it's possible, it sounds plausible to me, that if you have a being that is living independently in some other dimension beyond the astral plane, beyond being stuck, you know, through the light, that that being with some other type of spiritual power might have the ability to do that, you know, to meet on the bridge, so to speak, because actually there are a lot of dreams of people, you know, leaving the body at night, walking on a bridge, and someone that is deceased walks on the bridge to meet them as if they are meeting halfway, as a metaphor for exactly what you described. One raises its vibration, one lowers the vibration, and kind of meets in that meeting ground. So in that sense, I sense that is true. I also believe that there are some beings that are even beyond that, higher than that, whatever, or more conscious or more evolved or of some different species of light being, that would have the ability to lower their frequency enough that they could probably manifest right before us if they wanted to. You know, like I suspect, I mean, I don't know, but I would suspect that a being like, you know, like Mother Mary, if she wanted to, could probably, you know, have the volition to lower her frequency and manifest right before you and appear three-dimensionally and, you know, dance a jig and give you communion if she wanted to, whatever, you know. And I believe that probably angels probably could do that, and
sure,
other types of beings that way that have volition. But there are so many things running around the astral plane who have no volition that they probably can't do anything but be right where they are.
Well, John, if I could ask you a personal question here,
sure,
personal for me, because I've alluded to this story in the past on the show, but one of my strongest paranormal events I ever had happen was shortly after the passing of my grandfather, who I was very close with. I don't handle death real well, as people that have listened to the show before know. That's my main fear in life is death. It's kept me awake at night. It's, you know, I think it's what drives me in this field to learn more and understand what comes next so that I can get over this fear. And when my grandfather died, it devastated me. And for weeks, I was just in a cloudy void. And I had I hate calling it a dream because it sounds like I'm cheapening it, but in a dream, I was out running through a field or something, and suddenly I just heard my grandfather's voice very clearly go, "David," and I stopped, turned around, and I was no longer in that field. I was in his house in Louisiana, and I remember watching him come out of what used to be the slave quarters and head towards the house, and I thought to myself, consciously, and I still remember it as though it's an actual event that occurred, I remember thinking, wow, he's doing this so that I have a little time to adjust to realizing I'm watching my dead grandfather walk towards me. And he came in and he said, "Hey, kid, we got to talk." And he began to talk to me about death and life and not to worry and giving me some amazing answers to questions that I don't think I knew the answers to begin with. but we just had this great dialogue, and you were talking about that dream state where there's a bridge and you two come together. I often wondered if this was the case, because at the end, the really interesting thing to me is we're a very huggy, kissy family. And he said, well, kid, I got to get going. And he extended his arms to give me a hug. And when I first went to give him a hug and a kiss on the cheek, I backed away because it felt like a warm vibration, almost like a really heavy magnetic field. And I backed up from it, and I just had this look. And he said, oh, he goes, I'm sorry, you're not used to that. Hold on. And he like took a breath and concentrated. He said, okay, now. And he gave me a hug and a kiss, and I could feel skin and feel his arms around me. It wasn't this warm vibration. And then he said, well, I got to go, kid. And as he drifted away, you know, as he kind of walked away from me, I sat up in my bed and I could see his face evaporate in front of me, and I could physically smell his cologne. As a matter of fact, the girl I was dating at the time woke up when I sat up, and she said, what's that smell? It smells like your grandfather's clothes. I kept a bag of his clothes in the closet after he passed away, and I had that happen. I mean, do you think that's what I had happen, was that we came to those vibrational levels so that I could get these answers? And then my other question to you is, I know that you said there's a lot of imposters. One of the questions I've often had about relative ghosts that come back to visit us, do you believe that they truly are ghosts, or do you think it might be more of an angelic coming back but taking the guise of somebody that we know or love so that we can understand the message, and we're not so focused on who the hell is this talking to me as we are what the message is that they're giving to us?
I think that that's possible. I think that all of those things are possible when you're talking about the astral plane, just like all things are possible, you know, in the dream state.
Mm-hmm.
The experience you had with your grandfather, that's exactly what I'm talking about. You went into that astral plane where he was then, as a being of volition, able to use the raw energy to manifest a situation that a child could relate to, a field, you're running the house, him walking toward the house, and then you're feeling his, you know, his vibration, and he has to densify so that you can feel skin. Just like I was saying earlier, that you know, the ghost on the astral plane can densify vibrations and manifest food, okay, or any other experience. So you were meeting him halfway, and yes, but the other part about angels coming and pretending to be a relative, I think that that is possible, especially in the cases where maybe that relative can't come through themselves. I think that is very possible. I also remember a really good example of this in, did you see the Jodie Foster movie Contact?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, where she went and thought that she was seeing her father, but being manifested, appearing to be her father, so that
right.
she could be comfortable with that. But it was actually some higher being coming as an imposter, because it had to come and manifest in some form that she would feel comfortable with at first.
Right. So it wasn't, you could get through that trust issue right away and,
mm-hmm.
and take the message that was given to you. Well, John, we do have to take our second break here real quick. Everybody stay tuned. This hour's gone by really fast, so we're going to take our second break of the hour. We'll be right back with more of John Oliver right after this.
It will keep you on the edge of your seat.
I must have drank me about 15 Dr. Peppers.
I got to pay.
Just don't get any on the floor. Hurry back. There is more to come from the darkness on the edge of town.
For 58 years, Fate has consistently supplied its loyal readership with a broad array of true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life, and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, archaeological hotspots, alternative science, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
If you read Taps Paramag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
Could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Taps Paramag takes you where few would ever go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology in the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at tapsparamag.com.
Are you tired of reading about what couple in Hollywood is breaking up or divorcing? Have you ever wondered where you can find the news that covers the subjects that you are really interested in? I would like to invite you to visit SupernaturalNews.com. Supernatural News uses the latest internet technology to search for the topics we know you will be interested in reading. News of the latest Bigfoot, UFO, or Loch Ness Monster sightings. Read about the latest conspiracy theories and urban legends. Supernatural News, where belief and reality merge.
In the Amityville Horror, the ghost told them to get out the house. White people stayed in there. Now that's a hint and a half for your ass. A ghost say get the f*** out, I would just tip the f*** out the door. They walked and looked in the toilet bowl with blood in the toilet. I said, that's peculiar. I would have been in the house and said, oh baby, this is beautiful. We got a chandelier hanging up here, kids outside playing, it's a beautiful neighborhood. We ain't got nothing to wear. I really love them, this is really nice. Too bad we can't stay, baby.
We're the type of guys who would have stayed just for the extra company. Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, co-host and producer, Tim Dennis. Want to make sure to let everybody know that tickets for the Stanley event coming up in November are going fast. We've sold over 100 tickets in the first couple of weeks that it's been open. So if you want, you can come on out and join us. Jason and Grant from the Ghost Hunters, Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence, John Oliver from Haunting Evidence will be there. And also we've got Chris Fleming from Dead Famous, a lot of other great speakers, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, John Zaffis, everybody's going to be out there. You can get all that information at darknessevents.com. Again, that's darknessevents.com. We're going to go back to our guest, John Oliver, and wrap up. We have about 4 minutes left in this segment with him this evening for the first hour. Then we'll come back after the second hour and talk to him some more. I do have a question for you here. John, Shay from our boards wants to know, was there a moment that really made it clear for you that the things that you were seeing were real and that you weren't crazy? Or did you ever not question your sanity doing this? Did you always just assume that this was normal for you?
You know what really made it real for me? I always thought it was real.
Okay.
I always thought it was real. But here is when I really realized, well, maybe I didn't always think it was real. Mm-hmm. When I was asked to do a police case the first time, I was 16 years old. And it was like, absolutely not. No way am I going to, you know, do that. That was my answer when I was asked. Because all of a sudden, I mean, cops are about as real as you can get.
Right.
And when I was able to give identifying information that was able to be verified by them, I was like, wow, it works in the real world. You know. And then I realized that it maybe had some real applications.
Well, that's a good segue, too, as we're going to go into the second hour and talk to you more about your work on haunting evidence and work with criminals. How did you get that first call? What were you doing that brought the police attention to you that you should get called to help in on a case?
Well, I had become well known in my high school and in my community as someone who was very sensitive to objects, you know, jewelry, antiques, even, you know, haunted places. I was known for that.
Psychometry, friend, right? Isn't that what they call it?
Exactly. Psychometry.
Okay.
You know, or just, you know, sensitivity to, you know, to a space when I would go into a room or something. But yeah, psychometry. So a friend of a friend had an out-of-town a detective, an out-of-state detective, passing through for the afternoon to visit her, and somehow the conversation turned to me because he was talking about a case that was unsolved, and he said, oh, I wonder if your friend would come and talk to me. So that's how I got the phone call, and that's when I literally said, oh, no, I can't do that, absolutely not. There's no way I can't go and talk to a policeman. You know, you're 16 years old, you're going to go talk to a detective, and I did it, and I did it again later on for a detective that called me at my high school that had heard about me and came and picked me up and took me to a police academy where I met many detectives from all over the state of Virginia all at once. Word of mouth spread, and then for years after that, whenever anyone heard about me, I would work on a case. And that's how it all started.
Well, John, we're going to be taking a break here to go up to the top of the hour. It's going fast on us, so we'll come back and we'll try to get into the hard questions a little bit faster into the second hour. And I think we're going to, Tim, let's just cut it down to one commercial break for the second hour so we can try to get through everything we can with John, because I have a feeling we've got a lot of questions that are coming up from the board. I'm getting PM'd left and right, so we'll try to get to everybody's questions in the second hour. All of you, please stay tuned with us here on Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show, as we are going to be talking to our guest, John Oliver, who is one of the psychic detectives on the TV show Haunting Evidence on Court TV on Wednesday evenings at 9 p.m. So you want to check that out. Also, check the boards. We've got some great speakers coming up. Dr. Barry Taff is going to be with us next week, and he is one of the main investigators of the case that was involving the entity. He's done over 4,300 different paranormal investigation and cases. He's going to be with us for a full 2 hours next week, and then the following week we're going to go UFO on you. We're going to be talking to two of the main names out in the paranormal UFO field, Stanton Friedman, and then we're also going to be speaking to the publisher of UFO magazine, William Burns. So stick with us on the show. We got a lot of great shows coming up over the next couple of weeks. Stay with us for the next hour as we come back with our guest John Oliver from the TV show Haunting Evidence. And if you want more information on John Oliver, or you'd like to check out his information, you can check out his website. And his website is johnjoliver.com. So give it a check. Again, you can click on the link on our website by going to darknessradio.com. Click on the show tab, and there's all the information about our guest and links to take you to their websites. We'll be back with more and more of your questions right after this.